All right, let's settle back in. We started this new series. Last week we started a new series entitled The Green Elephant. You're like, what the heck, green elephant? What are we talking about? We're talking about this big issue. You know the elephant in the room? You know that saying? Meaning there's something big and obvious that we all know about. It affects every aspect of our life. It's so big and clear. It's right there in the room, but we don't talk about it. It's like the elephant in the room. You know that saying? Well, we're doing a series about a big elephant in the room, something that dominates our beliefs, dominates our actions, dominates our feelings about life and the choices we make. And this big elephant is green, all right? We're talking about money, biblical advice for financially difficult times. Because we acknowledge that our view of money, it feels like in everything we talk about here at the church about living a new life and choices we're making and living for God and all these things, there's always a yeah, but. So yeah, that sounds great, Tom, but. And the but is usually has to do with money, right? About finances, about needs and all these things. And because it affects all the choices we make, it's a big issue that affects a lot of things. But we don't normally talk about it. You know, at the church, we'll talk about all kinds of stuff. We'll get into issues. We'll get into all kinds of touchy stuff, right? We'll get into issues of sin and depravity and fallenness and addiction. And we're open about all these things, these worries we have in our lives and struggles. We pray for each other. And we talk about all these things. But when it comes to money, I don't want to hear about money at the church. It's like separation of church and state. I like separation of church and money. We keep those issues separate. We don't talk about money at the church. That's one of the things we don't talk about. But it's such a big issue and affects so many areas of our life that we realize we need to talk about it. And again, if this is your every time we talk about it, we've been talking about it in this way. This isn't to get something from you, so you can just relax. Okay, this isn't we're not going to pass a big bucket at the end and say fill up this bucket with money. This isn't a giving message. This is a living message. All right, it's about understanding God's view of our finances, so we have these biblical principles to understand our finances in this financially difficult time. So that's the whole point of today and the series ahead. Now, as we talk about money, I bet we'd all agree, there's one thing we could all agree about our personal financial situation. It's something we could all agree about. We don't got enough of it, right? It's a struggle. I mean, money, the whole issue with money and finances, it's a struggle. It's a burden. I mean, it feels like our lives feel like they're almost dedicated to, everything I do is built around this struggle I need to do to get money. I have to do all these things I don't want to do, and I have to forego time with my family, and I got to forego time with my loved ones. I got to not do the things I want to do. I got to get up early. I got to go do something I don't want to do. Also, I get a paycheck, and the whole reason I need this paycheck is to pay these bills I got. I got all these bills and needs and all that. And we work so hard, and it feels like we get just enough to pay the bills. But it just stretches, and it's so thin, and we almost don't make it, and it's a worry at the end of each month, and then we kind of make it through, and then the next month it starts over again. And it could just, your life could turn into this pursuit of just this struggle, right? Just never quite enough. You can't get over the hump. There's always one more credit card bill to pay, or one more phone bill comes, or you get a parking ticket at the worst time, or you, whatever, right? There's just always one more thing. It could feel like, we feel like there's just no satisfaction in life, right? In this pursuit, it's a struggle. There's no relief from it. And we can kind of get caught up in that struggle. I think we can all relate to that. Whether you got a lot of money or a little money, I promise you, we're all dealing with the same issue. All right? Because if you got a lot of money, that means you got a lot of bills. All right? It's not just like you have a lot of money sitting around. That's just how it works. So there's this burden in our life, and our life is a struggle. But yet when we look in the Bible what the Christian life is supposed to look like, it doesn't talk about it that way. It doesn't talk about the abundant life, right? About, you know, all this stuff, about the abundant life and freedom of new life and all this, and say, I don't know, I just don't see it. That's not my life at all. So what's the issue? What are we missing? What's the problem? Why is life, and specifically money and our finances and resources, why is it such a struggle? Why is it such a burdensome struggle? That's what we're going to look at today. So if you got Bibles, open them up to Haggai. It's in there, trust me. Haggai. It's one of the minor prophets. And I know, Tom, I was reading Haggai this morning, you know. Haggai is a little teeny book, all right? I'm going to give you a hint on how to find it. Here's how you're going to find Haggai. If you could find Matthew, a lot of people can find Matthew. Go to Matthew and turn left, okay? Go to Matthew, turn left, and go turn back, and you're going to see Malachi, then you're going to see Zechariah, and then you're going to see Haggai. So Haggai chapter 1 is what we're going to look at today. What can Haggai have to do with us? What's this, 2013? What can Haggai possibly have to say to us? You will see. Who found it in a paperback Bible? What page is it on? 660. If you got one of these Story of God paperback Bibles, page 660 is where it is. Chapter 1, verse 1. We there? I don't hear much turning. You guys found it fast. We got a good group here. All right, chapter 1, verse 1, book of Haggai. I'm going to read verses 1 through 11. In the second year of King Darius, on the first day of the sixth month, the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest. Okay, verse 2. This is what the Lord Almighty says. These people say the time has not yet come for the Lord's house to be built. Verse 3, then the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai. Is it time for you yourselves to be living in your paneled houses? Well, this house remains in ruin. Verse 5, now this is what the Lord Almighty says. Give careful thought to your ways. You have planted much, but harvested little. You eat, but never have enough. You drink, but never have your fill. You put on clothes, but are not warm. You earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it. He knew about 2013. They knew about that here. Verse 7. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Give careful thought to your ways. Go up into the mountains and bring down timber and build the house so that I may take pleasure in it and be honored, says the Lord. You expected much, but see, it turned out to be little. What you brought home, I blew away. Why, declares the Lord Almighty? Because of my house, which remains in ruin, while each of you is busy with your own house. Therefore, because of you, the heavens have withheld their dew and the earth its crops. I called for a drought on the fields and the mountains, on the grain, the new wine, the oil, and whatever the ground produces, on men and cattle, and on the labor of your hands. All right. Well, hey, I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit and let you see what I do to prepare a message. And it's kind of a picture of Bible study of what I learned in seminary. And we're going to go through the process together to have an understanding of what this means and then ultimately what it means to us. So first step in Bible study is figuring out what is this saying? What is the content of this? What is the author saying here? Within their context, what's happening to them 2,500 years ago? And then after that step, then we're going to look, well, what's the timeless truth that we can pull out of that that then relates to us? So first step, let's see what's going on in the context here of this passage. This passage takes place in 520 B.C., actually, it takes place on August 29th, 520 BC. This is an actual day in history. That whole first verse of all these names that we don't know and all this stuff that doesn't seem to matter to us, it's revealing the exact day. We can trace it back to the exact day that this was talking about, when this happened. So first I want to point off, this is history, okay? This isn't some fairy tale book or some allegorical thing. No, this is history. This really happened. Okay, this is the people that lived, and we could trace it back to when this happened. This was August 29th, 520 BC. And the context here, Israel, the nation of Israel, the people of God, they had been in captivity for the past 50 years or so. The Babylonians came in, conquered them, wiped out the temple, wiped out all their houses, everything, knocked down their city, drug them off in chains, and took them back to Babylon. That was a long time ago, so only old people remember that. For the last 50 years, they've been growing up in this captivity. Well, since then, the Persians came in, defeated the Babylonians. It's now the Persians are in charge. It's the Israelites that said, hey, can we go back to our homes now? Can we go back to our land? And the Persians are like, sure. So Cyrus, the king of the Persians, issues a decree that the Israelites can go back home, rebuild their temple, go back to their business. And so they've gone back home after being away for 50 years. They've returned back home, And then they come back to ruins. All right, they come back to all these ruins. They're back, say, what do we do now? So they start building their houses. Right? There's things there. They come back to ruins. And so they go about their business. They start building their houses and planting crops and doing the things they need to do to survive. And meanwhile, God asks, hey, what about my house? You guys have gone back to your business. It's business as usual. You're building your houses, you're planting your crops, you're doing your stuff, but my house remains over in ruins. And he says, is it time for you to be in your nice paneled houses? That was just like a fancy thing back there, paneling. Paneled houses was like, they would like this sanctuary. Look at these paneling we got. That was a high-end thing at the time, paneled houses. So he says, hey, you're all living in your paneled houses. Is it time for you to be in your paneled houses? Well, me, my house is in ruins? Fair question, because by the date that we know this, and since we know when they came back, they've actually been back for 18 years at this point when he asked them this. The first 2 years, first thing they do when they get back, they start patching up the walls, they lay the foundation for the temple. And then, for whatever reason, they turned from that and went to their own business. And for the last 16 years, this empty foundation has been sitting there. And God says, hold up, that's enough. You've been living in your houses, but still not building mine. So what do we see? There's some fill in the blanks here. What do we see in Haggai? What's going on? The first thing is this. The Israelites built their own homes before rebuilding the temple. Okay, so that's what happened then in their context. So they're living life, doing their thing, and we see that they were building their own homes. They rebuilt their own homes before rebuilding the temple. Second thing we see is their life was a struggle. Life was hard, right? Life was difficult. He says, give careful thought to your ways. He says, you have planted much but harvested little. You eat but never have enough. You drink but never have your fill. You put on clothes but are not warm. You earn wages, only put them in a purse with holes in it. So as they're going about their business is hard. All right, things are difficult. They can find no satisfaction. No matter what they do, as much work as they're in, they plant it all. It says, you expected much but harvested little. Right? So they're planting a big thing, you know, they're planting in the field. They're expecting a big harvest. It comes back as little. They're putting on clothes to keep warm, and they can't get quite warm enough. They eat food, but it's never quite enough. They drink, they're still thirsty. All these things. They can put money in the purse, but it feels like it's just going everywhere. They're losing everything. Whatever they have, it's just not enough. There's dissatisfaction. Life is a struggle. They're going through drought. It talks about how there's drought in the land. There's no rain. The crops aren't growing. They're experiencing this. Their life is a struggle. Okay, we would see that. We would agree that. Their life is a struggle. Third thing that we see, God caused their struggle. And this one to me is what? God caused their struggle. Not just God allowed their struggle. Not just missed out on God's blessing because they weren't doing his stuff first. But actually, God went out of his way. He caused the struggle, right? In verse 9, it says, you expected much, but turned out to be little. What you brought home, I blew away. All their hard work, you know? He blew it away. Why, declares the Lord? Because of my house, which remains in ruin, while each of you is busy with his own house. And it says, therefore, because of you, the heavens have been withheld their dew and earth its crops. I called for a drought on the land and the mountains and the grain and the new wine, et cetera, et cetera. He says, you know why it's not working out? Because I made it not work out. God caused their struggle. He's causing their struggle because they're working on their own house, their own kingdoms, their own lives, while not taking care of God's business, God's kingdom. He said, well, fine, I'm not going to bless that. Matter of fact, I'm going to make it a struggle. Blow it away. Blow away all that hard work. Snip a hole in the bottom of your purse. You know, I'm going to do all that stuff. God caused their struggle. And he says, give careful thought to your ways. You know, he says that a couple times. He says, think about it for a second. Let me fill you in. Think about this. you've been taking care of all your business and doing that instead of my business. Give careful thought to your ways. Has it been working? Think about it. You work so hard because you want to make this happen. You want to experience satisfaction. You work so hard. But notice, think about it. Think about your ways. Isn't it interesting that you never quite have enough? Those harvests don't really turn out. Isn't it interesting that the money just kind of seems to disappear? Isn't it interesting that even when you eat, you don't get your fill? Think about your ways. Build my house and my kingdom. He says, think about your ways. Okay, so that's what we see from Haggai. We see that the Israelites built their own homes before building the temple. Their life was a struggle. You know, they didn't feel any satisfaction in life. And that God caused that struggle. So what is the timeless truth? We look at that. That happened 2,500 years ago. All right? So what's the timeless truth today that we can pluck out of that that still is good today? It was good 1,000 years ago. It was good 2,000 years ago. It's good today. It'll be good 1,000 years from now. What is the timeless truth that we can apply to our lives today? This is it, I think. The reason we struggle, this is us now, the reason we struggle is we view our resources as a tool to build our kingdom rather than God's kingdom. The reason that we can so relate to verses 5 through 6 about harvesting is not quite what you expect, about the struggles of life, and there's just not enough, and never satisfied, and everything is difficult, because we can also relate to what they were doing, of using their resources, dedicating their resources to build their own house. And when we say house, it's not just the physical structure. We're talking about temple, it's not just the physical structure. It's about priorities. It's about kingdom, right? It's about what motivates you, what drives you, your stuff or God's stuff. And so we can relate to both those things because we do the same thing in our own lives. I firmly believe that the reason we experience so much struggle in our lives is because we view our resources, the resources that come under our control, as the point of those is to build up our kingdoms rather than to build up God's kingdom. And that is a cause of our struggle. And here we are working so hard to try to achieve satisfaction in life. And we think, boy, I just need more money. If I had one more paycheck, or if I just got this little bit of raise, then I would experience satisfaction in life. But I guarantee you, you get that raise, and within like a couple months later, man, if I just had one more raise, if I had a little bit more money, if this lottery ticket hits, if I get the scratch off right, then I'll experience satisfaction in life. That lottery ticket. Have you ever watched that? They won the lotto show, whatever. Those people are all messed up. No matter where you're at in life, everybody in every stage of life is saying the same thing. If I just had a little bit more. If I just had a little bit more. Rockefeller, richest man who ever walked the earth, and back in 1910 or so, he made Standard Oil, right? Rockefeller was worth $900 million back in 1912 or whatever. And at that time, the average annual salary was $3,000. So when average person was making $3,000, he had $900 million. Richest man ever lived. He worked himself to the bone, all right? He killed himself practically by working himself so hard. On his deathbed, all the hair had fallen out of his body because of the stress he had, eyebrows and everything. He was dealing with stress and worry, and his advisors came around him. He's on his deathbed. He won't stop working. And they ask him, John, how much is enough? When are you going to stop? You got to settle down. How much do you need? And he says, always $1 more. So if you think, if I just had $1 more, I'll stop, and that's all I good, then I'll experience satisfaction. That's a lie. You're not going to experience satisfaction. You know why? He says, God's not going to let you experience satisfaction in that. Here we are. We want to build up our own kingdoms. We want to build up our own empires, build up our houses, and then we want God to bless us in that. We want God to be for that. And we pray to God, please help me to get this extra money or build up this thing. Not for his kingdom. But if we're really honest, it's for our own kingdom. And when we do that, we miss out. And God's not for that, right? He's not going to bless that. He's not going to be all about that. And you can think, oh, well, hold on, Tom. What about all these people that aren't about God? They're just about building up their own kingdom, and they're getting blessed. They got a bunch of money. They're doing good. Are they doing good? Because, again, I guarantee they don't have satisfaction. Even though they got the money coming in and they feel like they got all the bling and all that, they're still searching for more. they still want more. They're still not that satisfaction in life. Still feels like there's a hole cut in the bottom of their purse. They still eat and don't get their fill. There's something lacking. I don't know if you ever watched that show Mad Men. I like the show Mad Men. I probably shouldn't say that up here, but there's stuff about it. A lot of things I don't like. It reveals the world to me. Don Draper, the star of the show, says this line at the end of last season. He says, "What's happiness? What's happiness?" He says, "Happiness is just the feeling you have the moment before you need more happiness. That's all it is. It's a fleeting thing." And we're all working, all of us, the people out on the streets, everybody's rushing after happiness. If I can just get this $1 more, I'll get happy. I'll be satisfaction. I'll be done. Well, as soon as you got it, you know what? You need more of it because it goes away. And so if we're trying to find satisfaction through our possessions, through our resources, if we think they're there to build up our own kingdom, our own empires, you're going to miss out. We don't have it. That's why the biggest question people ask, the big life question, what's the meaning of life? People with all the money in the world still ask that question. What's the meaning of life? Because they still don't have satisfaction. The issue is this. You weren't put on this earth and created as a perfect tool of God. You weren't created, put together in God's perfect wisdom, just so that you could build up an earthly empire. You weren't created and knit together in God's perfect plan just to build up this earthly kingdom. Just to work some job, just to accrue as much stuff as you can get, just to get the nicest car you can afford, the biggest lease payment you can handle, just so you can wear clothes with a certain label on them, just so you can do all this stuff and increase your credit limit and live on a certain street versus a different street, and to have the corner office and to all this. Your life is so much bigger than that. There's so much more to that. So people giving their life to that, about building their own kingdoms, they're asking the question, what's the meaning to life? Because they know they're missing it. But we as Christians, we shouldn't have to ask that question. What's the meaning of life? Because we know. We know it's to glorify God and build up his kingdom. To be dedicated to those things. And I think the reason we struggle is we forget that. And we view our resources as a tool to build up our own kingdoms rather than God's kingdom. So what do we do? Back to Haggai. We're going back to Haggai. Hope you kept the Bible open there. Chapter 12. What do we do? Then Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and the whole remnant of the people obeyed the voice of the Lord, their God, and the message of the prophet Haggai, because the Lord their God had sent them, and the people feared the Lord. Verse 13, then Haggai, the Lord's messenger, gave this message of the Lord to the people. I am with you, declares the Lord. So the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, son of... let's skip it. He did a bunch of people, right? They came to begin to work on the house of the Lord Almighty, their God, on the 24th day of the sixth month in the second year of King Darius. Chapter 2. On the 21st day of the seventh month, so that's about 3 weeks later, the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai, speak to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, to Joshua, son of Jehozadak, high priest, and to the remnant of the people. Ask them, who of you is left who saw this house in its former glory? How does it look to you now? Does it not seem to you like nothing? But now be strong, O Zerubbabel, declares the Lord. Be strong, O Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest. Be strong, all you people of the land, declares the Lord, and work, for I am with you, declares the Lord Almighty. This is what I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, and my spirit remains among you. Do not fear. Verse 6, this is what the Lord Almighty says. In a little while, I will once more shake the heavens and the earth, the sea and the dry land. I will shake all the nations and the desired of all nations will come. And I will fill this house with glory, says the Lord Almighty. The silver is mine. The gold is mine, declares the Lord Almighty. The glory of this present house will be greater than the glory of the former house of the Lord Almighty. And in this place, I will grant peace, declares the Lord Almighty. Okay, so what do we see now? This, again, flashback to 2,500 years ago. What do we see from Israelites? First, we see this. The Israelites obeyed God and rebuilt the temple. That's what happened, right? They heard it. They heard the thing, and they obeyed God. They said, all right. They feared God. They knew, hey, when God says do something, you do it. So they obeyed God, rebuilt the temple. Second, God took their small act of faith and blessed it. They stepped out in the little way, and God blessed it. After, in verse 3, he says, hey, so they built this temple. They built it in 3 weeks. They stopped, and they built this little temple in 3 weeks. And when it's done, he says, okay, who here, is anybody still alive that saw the old temple? And all the guys, like 65 and older, said, yeah. He says, this looks like nothing compared to that, huh? It was a small, before the temple was all grand and beautiful and all this stuff, this was just like, it didn't even compare. It was nothing. But he said, in the midst of that, he said, but I will make this one way better. I will be with you. I will bring glory to this temple that's going to far surpass the other. He says, I've got my blessings all over this thing. You did this little act of faith that feels like nothing compared to what you had before, but I'm going to bless it. I'm going to make it wonderful. I'm going to use it to bring peace. And then finally, third thing we see, God's presence was with them. His presence was with them. And what was cool is in end of chapter 1, before they even started, it said they obeyed and they began work. As soon as they started, they hadn't even built the temple yet. God says, I am with you, declares the Lord. He says, I'm with you. Before it was even done, even in the process, when they had that shift of mind to say, no, these resources I have aren't meant for my kingdom, they're for God's kingdom. And as soon as they had that shift in their mind, God says, yes, I am with you. I am with you. Then he says, be strong, right? He says, be strong, Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel. Be strong, Joshua, son of Jehozadak. Be strong, remnant of the people. Be strong, Tom Demarest of Long Beach. Be strong, City Lights Church. Be strong, each one of you as children of God. Be strong, because I am with you. I am with you. I'm with you. So that's something we can celebrate, right? So what does that mean to us today? Be strong, I'm with you. What does that mean to us today? The fact that Israelites obeyed, God took their small act of faith and blessed it, and God's presence was with them. What does that mean for us today? God will take care of our business when we're devoted to his business. God will take care of our business when we're devoted to his business. When they dedicated their resources to his business, he started blessing them. They were trying to take care of their issues on their own, and it wasn't happening because God was against them. But when they said, no, they dedicated their resources back to God, said these are God's, and they back to building his kingdom, the God started blessing them. He started to take care of their stuff. And it was just a little bit, right? They didn't have much to give, but what they had, they dedicated to God to build this temple, and he blessed it and made it great. And we see this not just here, but all through the Bible. Last week we talked about where Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of God and all these things will be added unto you. Talking about all your needs. Because in the midst of this, you may say, yeah, but Tom, I got needs. You could be like the Israelites here and say, that's cool and all, we need to build a temple, but my house got to get built too. I got to harvest these crops. I got stuff to do. I'm busy. I can't just drop this and be about God's stuff. I got responsibilities. In the same way in Matthew, when he says, don't worry about those things. Don't worry about what you're going to eat, what you're going to wear. God knows you need that stuff. And look how he provides for the birds of the air, for the grass of the fields. He'll take care of everybody. He'll take care of you. We just got to trust him. And he says, seek first my kingdom, not your kingdom. Seek first my kingdom and my glory, and all these things will be added unto you. So again, if we can be about his business, he take care of our business. Also in Psalms chapter 1 says, blessed is the man whose delight is in the law of God, who takes pleasure in it, who's all about God's plan. He is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. Talk about when we can find our delight in the ways of God compared to a tree planted by a stream of water. Even when it's drought and all that, our roots are right in the stream. Even when the outside's not looking good, our needs are met. All right? And I don't want you to say, oh, everything does prosper. Yes, get rich. My kingdom's going to be awesome. No, hold on. This not here prosper and think that's why I'm going to have a great kingdom. No, but he said all your needs will be met. He will take care of you, all right? He will bless you and take care of you. As we're devoted to his kingdom, as devoted to his business, he'll take care of our business. Be strong, because I'm with you. And you may look at that and say, I don't know, Tom. I don't know. All these resources, I don't know. It's hard, you know. They're for me, and it's something I could visually see, and I got needs. I got bills to pay. Yeah, we know. You do. I'm not saying you don't pay those bills, but recognizing this, the resources we have are not meant to build up our own kingdom, be about our business, but about be devoted to God's business and His kingdom. The whole goal of our money, right, is that it'll provide this satisfaction for us. We're pursuing this satisfaction in life. And I would say the best way to experience that satisfaction, the best investment ever, what we're talking about today, the best investment you can make ever is dedicating it back to God, giving it back to Him and dedicating it to His business, because He's the true giver of satisfaction. You want comfort in life? You're going to find it in God. You're not going to find it in your possessions. You want peace in life? You're going to find it in God. You're not going to find it in your possessions. You want joy in life? You're going to find it in God. You're not going to find it in your possessions. I know it's hard to trust Him with it. It's hard, because what if He takes it all? Right? What if He takes it all? First off, He could if He wanted, right? He doesn't need your permission. Right? Let's be real. He could. But two, He's proven His love for you. He's proven He's already got what your best in mind, right? It's not that for God so wanted your money, He sent His only begotten Son, right? That's not how the verse goes, right? Because He loves us. He's proven He loves you and wants what's best for you, all right? He cares. And the reason this is such a big issue, because wait, first off, does God need our money? No, of course not. Did He need their piddly trees to build that temple? It's not like 2,500 years ago, He's like, man, I'm so bored, I got no place to go. I wish they'd build my house so I could finally go over there. No, He could have those trees just fall over and build up a temple, right? He didn't need their little effort, but He wanted them to do that. He doesn't need our money, our investment. He doesn't need that. But why is it such a big deal? Because He's after our heart, right? And He knows there is a direct tie between our money, our possessions, our resources, and our heart. So where your heart will be, where your treasure is, your heart will be also. Right? He's after our life. He wants us to prioritize Him, to be about Him. He just wants us to choose Him. He wants our life. And He knows that there's a tie here. So that's why He says He wants us to view our resources not as a resource, not just to build up our own kingdom, but instead to build up His kingdom. And He says, then trust me, I'll take care of the rest. I'm with you. I can handle it. You want satisfaction in life? I can handle it. And I know it's a big step because, you know, you're thinking, oh, my gosh. You know, here, look. Find a bigger one. There. You guys thinking. Look at that. $20 bill. You think, oh, my gosh. You look at this and say, oh, but it's mine. I worked so hard for it. And you start looking at it and think all the things it can give me. This can almost give me 9 holes of golf, right? We learned that yesterday. It can if you're willing to walk, if you don't have a cart. I love golf, right? There's so many things I could do with this. Oh, it could buy me one of those 2 shoes, you know, the pair of shoes I want. It could get me a nice meal. It could do all these things. And we see satisfaction in this. But it's so fleeting and so empty. But we could hold it, you know, and it's mine. It's in my wallet. It's in my pocket. It's mine. It takes an act of faith to trust God with it. And that's not saying you just give it to the first homeless man with a cup out. Right? We know better than that. Let's not be too simplistic here. I know you got needs and all that, but what I'm saying is acknowledging this isn't for your kingdom. This is for God's kingdom. And thinking, because we know everything belongs to God, right? Even if it's in my pocket, it belongs to God. Deuteronomy 10:14, to the Lord your God belongs the heavens, even the highest heavens, the earth and everything in it. It's all His. Just because I live in it, just because I have the keys to it, just because I'm wearing it, just because it's in my back pocket, doesn't mean it's mine, right? It's God's. So all we're really doing is entrusting back to Him the thing that's already His. So understanding this isn't mine, it's His, the question they'd be asking is, what would He want me to do with it? What's the best use of this for the kingdom? Now, often it's to pay my bills, right? That's part of it. Listen, that's fine. Those are things we deal with. We've got to live life and all that. But that's the question I hope we're always asking with our resources. They're not mine. The true master owns them. He's letting me use them. What's the best use of this money? You might also say, oh, yeah, His money. He didn't get up at 7 and go to that job. He didn't put up all that. I did. I earned it. Deuteronomy 8 says this. You may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it's he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. So even that, he could take that job away. We've seen that. We can all testify to that, right? He could take that job away. He could take those resources away. Boy, we really got to close up. Okay, let me just wrap all this up. Understanding that everything we have belongs to God. It's all his. He's just letting us use it. The best use of your resources, of your money, the best investment you can ever make is to use those resources that God has entrusted you to you to build his kingdom, not to build our own kingdom. Because in that pursuit of building our own kingdom, we miss out. We struggle. God opposes that. Okay? But if we can be willing to trust him and see him as these are resources to build his kingdom, then he comes in and says, be strong, I'm with you. And he is with us. He's with us in that. Right? We're so desperate for God to work in this area of finances, right? We want him to work. We want so dearly to work in this area of our lives, but then we hold it back, right? Please come and work in this area of my life, and we hold it back from him. We just got to bring it to him, right? And it's scary, it's hard, but he's proven he loved us. He wants what's best for us, so we could just trust him to take care of our needs. We're ending with a prayer of commitment. In your bulletin, there's a prayer of commitment there. I want to pray.